this is P. Fitz, and for the next hour, I'll be reading from the October 16th issue of the Wall Street Journal on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Some of the headlines from page one include, Israelis bury a hostage as peace handover stalls. An article we'll follow up on. Justices question election maps, use of race. And the Trump team to overhaul the IRS to probe left-leaning groups. Where to start? With the IRS. Effort would install ally at criminal unit who has made list of targets to investigate. The Trump administration is preparing sweeping changes at the Internal Revenue Service that would allow the agency to pursue criminal inquiries of left-leaning groups. More easily, people familiar with the matter said, a senior IRS official involved in the effort has drawn up a list of potential targets that includes major Democratic donors, some of the people said. The undertaking aims to install allies of President Trump at the IRS Criminal Investigation Division, or IRSCI, to exert firmer control over the unit and weaken the involvement of IRS lawyers in criminal probes, officials said. The proposed changes, which open the door for politically motivated probes and are being driven by Gary Shapley, an advisor to Treasury Sector Secretary Scott Bessent. Shapley has told people he is going to replace Guy Fieko, the chief of the investigative unit, and Shapley has been putting together a list of donors and groups he believes IRS investigators should probe. Among those on the list are billionaire Democratic donor George Soros and his affiliated groups. A senior IRS official and another person briefed on the list said, it isn't clear upon what grounds Shapley would seek to begin such an investigation. The effort within the IRS includes with a larger administration effort to probe left-leaning groups for helping finance organizations the president says are creating anarchy in the Democratic-led cities across the country. Trump, a Republican, has directed Bessent, who is also acting IRS commissioner, to identify financial networks the president says are fomenting political violence. Democrats said the effort is politically motivated and not based on evidence. Scott will do that. That's easy for Scott, Trump said about Bessent helping with the investigation during a recent cabinet meeting. Shapley and Treasury Department spokesperson didn't answer questions about changes. Questions about changes to the IRS criminal unit or desired targets. I'm grateful to continue in my role in reforming IRS, Shapley said. The Treasury spokesperson said Bessent team at the IRS is bringing the best of America's private sector practices and organization to the agency. The team's focus remains collections, privacy, and customer service, the spokesperson said. Trump has had previously said that on Truth Social, that Soros and his son Alex should face federal charges under the RICO Act. And noted in a separate interview, the elder Soros should be in jail without offering any reasons. A senior Justice Department official recently urged several U.S. attorneys' offices investigate Soros' open society foundations. The Wall Street Journal previously reported Open Society Foundations has denounced the Justice Department effort as an attempt to silence Trump's critics. Trump has ordered Bessent and his acting IRS commissioner to refer certain tax-exempt organizations to the Justice Department for further investigation. Bessent also has been directed to use the Treasury's Terrorism and Financial Intelligence Office to examine groups' financial flows and try to trace any illicit funding streams. You can call the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service at 716-821-5555 to hear the rest of the story. Justices question election maps' use of race. Conservatives signal openness to revisit tools designed to bolster minorities. Washington, the Supreme Court on Wednesday signaled an openness to scaling back protections against racial discrimination in redistricting in a case that could further weaken the landmark voting rights law and make it more difficult for minorities to elect candidates of their choice. The justices heard arguments on Wednesday in a Louisiana redistricting battle. To re-examine when, if ever, it is permissible to take race into account in drawing electoral maps. Several conservative justices suggested creating race-based congressional districts to ensure the election of minority-backed lawmakers might no longer be justified under the Voting Rights Act of 1965. This court's cases in a variety of contexts have said that race-based remedies are permissible for a period of time, sometimes for a long period of time, decades in some cases, but that they should not be indefinite and should have an endpoint, Justice Brett Kavanaugh said during the morning session. The case is one of two on elections in which the court is revisiting long-standing precedents. This winter, it will consider whether Congress still can limit the amount of political parties spend on campaigns in coordination with the candidate they support. And the justices could soon add a new case on whether states can count postmarked mail-in ballots that arrive shortly after Election Day. The Louisiana case has been a drama in multiple acts. Lawmakers renew the state's congressional map after the 2020 census, but a court said the new lines were problematic because they diluted the power of black voters, which Supreme Court precedents have held violates the Voting Rights Act. The state tried again, aiming to comply with the court's order while preserving districts held by favored Republican incumbents, including House Speaker Mike Johnson. The solution? Drawing a second district in which black voters made up a majority up from one. This time, a group of self-described non-African American voters sued and won in a different court, alleging the new map was unconstitutional racial gerrymandering. If it was ever acceptable under our colorblind constitution to do this, it was never intended to continue indefinitely, Edward Grime, a lawyer representing the challengers, told the court. The Supreme Court took up the case last term but never decided it, calling instead for additional legal arguments on whether Louisiana's intentional creation of the black majority district violated constitutional amendments that guarantee everyone equal treatment under the law and protect the right to vote. Most justices in the court's conservative majority asked questions that raised clearer concerns about the race-based districts. Less clear was how broadly the court might rule. The court's liberal justices said arguments for limiting the Voting Rights Act were misguided. The law remains an important tool for guaranteeing that voters enjoy the same electoral opportunities. And maybe that remedy involves race consciousness. Maybe it doesn't, said Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson. If the courts reject the Louisiana map, the ruling could considerably weaken Voting Rights Act's protections that have allowed minorities to challenge electoral systems and districts as discriminatory. The court previously narrowed the law's sweep, most notably in 2013, ruling that Jim Crow era discrimination no longer justified requiring a group of mostly southern states to seek Washington's approval before changing election practices. The Supreme Court's new campaign finance case, which will be argued this winter, is driven by Republican leaders. The national Republican committees that support House and Senate candidates, along with Vice President J.D. Vance and former GOP Rep. Steve Cabot of Ohio, are asking the justices to allow political parties to spend unlimited amounts to influence federal elections with input from the candidate they are supporting. Republicans argue that it is an unconstitutional burden on their speech to limit consultation with candidates on what those ads say and when and where they run. Democrats say that limits should remain in place. The cases come as President Trump continues a years-long push to tighten rules for voting. One of his biggest targets has been mail-in ballots. An intra-party dispute on the issue is at the Supreme Court's doorstep, and the justices could say soon whether they will take it up or not. GOP officials in Mississippi have appealed to the High Court to save a state law that allows for the counting of absentee ballots postmarked by Election Day and received up to 5 business days later. Among those suing the state is Republican National Committee, which won an appeals court ruling that said ballots must be received by election day to count. This is potentially one of the most consequential terms for election law and voting rights in the Supreme Court in many years, New York University law professor Richard Pildes says. In news from around the states, in Massachusetts, Senator Markey gets primary challenge. U.S. Representative Seth Moulton, moderate Massachusetts Democrat, said Wednesday he would challenge Senator Edward Markey for the Democratic nomination in next year's Senate race, arguing it is time for the party to embrace a new generation of leadership. The announcement makes the race one of the most anticipated primary contests in the country and pits two of the heavily Democratic state's top politicians against each other. Markey, who fended off a 2020 challenge from Representative Joe Kennedy, the third in the Senate primary, would be 80 before his third 6-year term would begin. In a video accompanying his announcement, Moulton, 46, said the Democratic Party was stuck in the status quo and isn't fighting hard enough. In Oklahoma, a Bible mandate in schools rescinded. Oklahoma's new public school superintendent announced Wednesday he is rescinding a mandate from his predecessor that forced schools to incorporate the Bible into lesson plans for students. Superintendent Lindell Fields said he has no plans to distribute Bibles or biblical character education curriculum in classrooms. The directive last year from former Superintendent Ryan Walters drew condemnation from civil rights groups and prompted a lawsuit from a group of parents, teachers, and religious leaders that is pending before the Oklahoma Supreme Court. Oklahoma Governor Kevin Stitt appointed Fields to the superintendent's post after Walters resigned. Climate activists in Montana, their lawsuit was dismissed. Federal judge in Montana on Wednesday dismissed a lawsuit from young climate activists seeking to block President Trump's executive orders promoting fossil fuels and discouraging renewable energy. The activists said the orders would worsen global warming, threaten their lives, and violating their constitutional rights. Attorneys for the U.S. Justice Department in more than a dozen states had urged Judge Dana Christensen to dismiss the case. The judge said their bid to block Trump's orders was an unworkable request that would have required scrutiny of every climate-related action taken since the Republican came into office. You are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Wall Street Journal on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. It's 16 minutes after the hour. No evidence of tariff cheating found among appliance makers. Federal officials say they have found no evidence of widespread undervaluing of imported appliances after Whirlpool last month accused its rivals of possible tariff evasion. The Michigan-based maker of refrigerators, washing machines, and other products based its suspicions on import data that showed the declared customs value of numerous appliances plummeted starting in June. Washing machines from South Korea, for example, sank from an average value of $838 over the first 5 months of the year to $73. A smaller declared value would mean a lower tariff. Whirlpool said it shared its concerns with the Trump administration and confronted some of its rivals about the data, including South Korea-based Samsung Electronics and LG Electronics, and China-based Haier, which owns GE Appliances. Some customers brokers said the plunging values were likely due to data entry errors, not tariff dodging. After a review, U.S. Customs and Border Protection reached the same conclusion, finding that brokers and importers mistakenly inflated the quantity of products they were bringing into the country after new steel tariffs complicated reporting. Some import data has been revised since Whirlpool raised the issue, but the company said it still shows precipitous drops in valuations. Customs officials haven't responded to the concerns Whirlpool has raised, the company said. Israel-Hamas start phase two of talks. Militant group returns two more bodies of hostages, a key sticking point. Israel and Hamas began negotiating second phase of a plan outlined by President Trump to end the war in Gaza. As debates continued about the militant group's failure to return all the bodies of dead hostages as required in the first phase, Hamas handed over the bodies of two more hostages to Israel on Wednesday, a day after both sides accused each other of violating the ceasefire that was part of the deal that released all 20 living detainees from Gaza. Mediators were still negotiating with Hamas over releasing a few more bodies. The latest transfer means that the bodies of 9 of the 28 dead hostages are now back in Israel. U.S. officials said Wednesday they didn't believe the deal had been violated, saying Hamas had honored its commitment to release all live hostages. And the U.S. and mediators were still working to get as many bodies out as possible. We continue to give them the intelligence that the Israelis have, and we keep working with in good faith until we're able to exhaust the mechanism, a senior U.S. official said. Earlier, On Wednesday, Israel said three bodies turned over by Hamas a day earlier were Israeli hostages, but that a fourth body wasn't a match. A 20-point plan laid out by Trump required the militant group to hand over all living and deceased hostages in the first phase. The second phase takes on another thornier issue, such as post-war governance in Gaza. New security arrangements under an Arab-led force and disarmament of Hamas. Mediators are discussing sending an initial group of 1,000 Palestinian police, trained in Egypt and Jordan to help provide security in Gaza, Arab officials say. Earlier this year, Egypt and Jordan began training Palestinians for a force they hoped would reach 10,000, the Wall Street Journal reported. The plan could face pushback from Israel, which has resisted security forces from Palestinian Authority, the Hamas rival that governs parts of the West Bank. But the international force called for under the Trump plan will also be difficult to assemble, with Arab governments reluctant to look like occupiers. Israelis celebrated Monday's return of the last 20 living hostages, but Hamas has only turned over four bodies that day. Israeli responded Tuesday by telling humanitarian groups that it is cutting back the amount of humanitarian aid promised under the agreement to put pressure on Hamas to return the deceased. Later that day, Hamas turned over four more bodies. Hamas had told mediators that it doesn't know where all the bodies are, and Israel's intelligence services agree many will be hard to find, but Israel expected Hamas to turn over more bodies than the four it delivered Monday. And families of the hostages have publicly pressured the government to man the rest. The two sides agreed to set up an international task force to search for the remaining bodies. U.S. officials say they are discussing a program that would give residents incentive to help to locate the bodies and pay rewards for that type of good behavior. They have also discussed bringing in a Turkish team of more than 80 specialists in body retrievals who are trained in searching the rubble in the aftermath of earthquakes, a U.S. official said. Headlines from across the world. Ukraine. Germany pledges $2 billion in aid. Germany on Wednesday pledged more than $2 billion in military aid for Ukraine as the government of Kyiv signaled that it would need $120 billion in 2026 to stave off Russia's nearly four-year war. Defense Minister Boris Pistorius said Germany would buy $500 million worth of U.S. weapons for Ukraine under a new program to fast-track military equipment. Estonia, Finland, Lithuania, and Sweden said they would also participate in funding the initiative. Pistorius said Germany is providing air defense systems such as Patriot missile interceptors, radar systems, and precision-guided artillery rockets and ammunition. He said Germany would separately provide two IRIS-T air defense systems, guided missiles, and shoulder-fired air defense missiles. The United Nations agency says CO2 hit record levels. Heat-trapping carbon dioxide levels in the atmosphere jumped by the highest amount on record last year, soaring to a level not seen in human civilization and turbocharging the Earth's climate and causing more extreme weather, the United Nations Weather Agency said on Wednesday. The World Meteorological Organization said in its latest bulletin on greenhouse gases, an annual study released ahead of the UN's annual climate conference, that CO2 growth rates have now tripled since the 1960s and reached levels that existed more than 800,000 years ago. emissions from burning coal and oil and gas alongside more wildfires have helped fan a vicious cycle, the WMO report said. And a ceasefire reached with Afghanistan, headline for Pakistan. Pakistan and Afghanistan have announced a ceasefire on Wednesday after the deadliest clashes in years, which left dozens of people dead on both sides of the border. The pause came after appeals from major regional powers, including Saudi Arabia and Qatar, as the violence threatened to further destabilize the region, where groups including Islamic State and Al-Qaeda are trying to resurface. Pakistan accuses Afghanistan of harboring armed groups, a charge rejected by the country's Taliban rulers. Pakistan is grappling with militant attacks that have increased since 2021, when the Taliban seized power in Afghanistan. Pakistan's foreign ministry described the ceasefire as a 48-hour one. From the business and finance section of the Wall Street Journal, banks signal resilient economy. Boom in spending deals show strength, but bears point to reasons for concern. The nation's biggest bankers proclaimed this week that the U.S. economy is sturdy, the U.S. consumer is healthy, and they haven't seen much change in recent months. Yet they still sounded uneasy about what is around the corner. The banks, including J.P. Morgan, Bank of America, and Goldman Sachs, reported third-quarter profit and revenue that beat analysts' expectations, buoyed by a jump in deal-making, corporate spending, and healthy consumer activity. Growing confidence from business executives, low delinquencies on consumer debts, and a rallying stock market have all helped generate profit across the banks. As a group, the country's six largest banks earned nearly $41 billion in the past 3 months, up 19% from a year ago. You see strong consumer spend and stable deposits, and those things just kind of paint a picture of consistently strong consumer, Wells Fargo chief executive Charlie Scharf said. At the time, executives were pointing out causes for concern about the world's biggest economy. Some of the more bearish voices on Wall Street continue to point to more than 10 years without a prolonged recession or credit cycle, near record high stock prices, and the unexpected collapses of two companies in the automotive world as signs that not all is well in Camelot. When you see one cockroach, there's probably more, J.P. Morgan CEO Jamie Dimon said. Everyone should be forewarned. The economy has been flashing conflicting signals, with the job market cooling, inflation still elevated, and the stock market breaking several records this year. The picture is getting even murkier thanks to federal government shutdown, which could leave millions of Americans without paychecks and means investors won't be receiving regularly scheduled macroeconomic data about employment and prices. That will draw more attention to corporate earnings. For insight on the health of the consumers and businesses, big and small, banks in particular are viewed as barometers for the broader economy because they... To hear the rest of this article, please contact the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service at 716-821-5555, and someone will gladly read it for you. Dollar Tree keeps forecast steady. Dollar Tree backed its guidance for the third quarter and full year and said it's targeting earnings growth of up to 10% annually through 2028. Shares of the discount retailer prepared earlier gains to finish at 0.4% higher at $95.97. The fiscal 2026 earnings per share are expected to grow by a high teens percentage due to the timing of certain discrete cost benefits, Dollar Tree said. Last month, Dollar Tree said it expected third quarter adjusted earnings to be roughly flat from the year earlier at approximately $1.12 a share. For fiscal 2025, the company guided for adjusted earnings of between $5.32 and $5.72 a share and sales of $19.3 billion to $19.5 billion. Dollar Tree saw an uptick in sales last quarter, but warned that tariff-related costs would weigh on near-term earnings. You're listening to a reading of articles and features from the Wall Street Journal on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. It is 31 minutes after the hour. Driverless taxis to take on London's storied black cabs. London's famous black cabs are about to get some new competition, robo-taxis. Waymo said Wednesday it would launch a fully autonomous ride-hailing service in the UK capital next year, marking the Alphabet-owned company's European debut. Uber also is planning to roll out a London robo-taxi service after striking a partnership with local autonomous driving startup Wayve. Robo-taxis are set to become the newest cog in the centuries-old transport machine that includes many services that were groundbreaking in their day, such as the world's first underground railroad and its first regulated taxi service. Driverless taxis are rapidly becoming a familiar sight, sometimes even a tourist attraction, in tech-friendly American cities such as San Francisco, Los Angeles, and Austin, Texas. In August, Waymo also received a permit to start testing with safety drivers in New York City. But London's mix of medieval alleyways, Victorian terraces, and modern roundabouts are set to pose a new challenge. Waymo said a small fleet of Jaguar One Pace vehicles fitted with special sensors is already in transit and will start navigating through London in the coming weeks. Initially, humans will do the driving to map the city streets and gather data. London is Waymo's second international city after Tokyo, where it started testing its technology on public roads earlier this year. The UK government is eager to embrace robo-taxis as part of the plan to foster technology-led investment and growth. In June, it hit the pedal, saying it would allow pilot projects in the spring of 2026 ahead of a full legal rollout in 2027. Uber and London-based Wayve said at the time that they would trial the technology, though they didn't specify a timetable. Robo-taxis pose a fresh threat to London's traditional cabbies, whose numbers have declined rapidly in recent years. There were 14,069 black cabs earlier this month, according to licensing data, down from roughly 22,000 a decade ago. As the boxy people carriers have dwindled in London, vehicles regulated for private hire, which includes services like Uber that must be pre-booked, have proliferated and now number more than 96,000. Black cab drivers have to memorize London's labyrinth of streets and pass a test known as the knowledge, a feat sometimes seen as an anachronistic, a barrier to recruitment in the age of sat-nav. Steve McNamara, General Secretary of the Licensed Taxi Drivers Association, which represents the famously opinionated cabbies, attributed their decline to the pandemic and said numbers would stabilize in the coming years. Robotaxis aren't a threat for now, he said. I've got no confidence in the software being as smart as it needs to be to work in a city like London, McNamara said, noting its convoluted street network, which emerged from a patchwork medieval villages. London's cabbies were fierce opponents of Uber after it launched in London in 2012, blocking streets and launching legal challenges. Eventually, though, relations settled down as ride-hailing companies stopped pouring money into a ruinous price war and black cabs improved their service by adopting card machines and smoother-running electric vehicles. Uber is no longer the boogeyman it was, said McNamara. In a quick review of stocks, Dow Jones Industrial closed at 46,253.31, down 17.515 points. The S&P closed at 6671.06, up 26.75 or 0.4%. And the NASDAQ composite closed up at 226.70.08, 148.38 points or 0.66%. Ceasefire set to lift Israeli venture capitalists and startups. As soon as the ceasefire between Israel and Hamas was in sight last week, Lee Moser, who runs two Israeli venture funds, said she felt a change in sentiment from limited partners. A lot of people are coming back to the table, Moser said, adding that she started hearing from LPs who were waiting for the war to halt before investing in Israel. Moser is in the U.S. raising capital for her funds and says she has about 30% more meetings scheduled than she expected. She is a founder and general partner of Protego Ventures, which invests in growth stage defense tech startups based in Israel, and a managing partner and founder of A&D Ventures, which invests in early stage Israeli startups across sectors. On Friday, a U.S. family of office wrote a check to Protego. Moser said the LP told her they were waiting for the war to wind down and recent events led them to finally invest in the fund, she said. Israel has been at war with Hamas, which attacked the country on October 7th, 2023. The parties entered a ceasefire on Friday. Global investors were already stepping up their deal-making in Israel, according to a report by nonprofit startup Nation Central. In the first half of the year, 70% of funding rounds for Israel's startups included foreign investors, up from 58% in the previous year. Many venture capitalists expect the momentum in the country's tech market to accelerate in the war, if the war ends. Some investors place deals in Israel on hold until the end of the conflict's hot phase, said Rachel Gold, managing general manager of venture firm Venture Israel. They did so over a perceived risk in investing in what they viewed as a war zone, said Haim Sager, founding partner of Tel Aviv venture firm S Capital VC. At the same time, there have always been entities that have chosen to boycott Israel. They won't shift because of the ceasefire. It didn't start with this war, and it won't end with it, Gold said. Israeli venture funds are on track to raise about as much this year as last, according to a report by IVC Research Center, a research firm focused on the Israeli venture market. Together with law firm Gornitsky GNY and accounting firm KPMG, the conflict may have had a chilling effect, but not only on the margin, said Gil Dibner, founder and partner at London-based Angular Ventures, which invests in Israel. Synchrony Financial reports higher profit and revenue. Synchrony Financial logged higher profit and revenue in the third quarter as it returned to purchase volume growth driven by stronger spending trends. Synchrony, once part of General Electric, posted net earnings of $1.06 billion, up from $768 million a year ago. On a per-share basis, earnings of $2.86 came in ahead of the $2.23 that analysts polled by FactSet had expected. Revenue at the company, which provides financing for purchases such as appliances and aftermarket auto expenses such as tires and maintenance, edged 0.2% higher to $3.82 billion. Wall Street had modeled them at $3.8 billion. Net interest income rose 2.4% to $4.72 billion. In line with analyst views, purchase volume climbed 2.3 to 46 billion, while average active accounts slipped 3% to 68.3 billion. Our purchase volume growth was driven by improving trends across credit grades and generations. Reflecting the resilience of our customers and the compelling unity and value that Synchrony provides as they navigate the continued uncertainty in the broader environment, Chief Executive Brian Double said. He added that the company's credit performance has exceeded expectations so far this year. During the third quarter, the company's provision for credit losses decreased $451 million to $1.1 billion, driven by a reverse release of $152 million compared with a build of $44 million last year and a lower net charge-offs, which fell to 5.2% to total average loan receivables from 6.1% a year earlier. You're listening to a reading of articles and features from the Wall Street Journal on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. It is 43 minutes after the hour. BlackRock AI Group to buy data center firm for $20 billion. BlackRock's new artificial intelligence infrastructure consortium has struck its first deal, agreeing to acquire Aligned Data Centers from Macquarie Asset Management. The group is paying roughly $20 billion for the company, people familiar with the matter said. The buyer group also includes Mubadala Investments, MGX, and BlackRock's Global Infrastructure Partners. The company said Wednesday that the transaction worth $40 billion, including debt, ranks among the largest data center deals ever and is expected to close in the first half of 2026, pending regulatory approvals. The deal is the latest sign that AI build-out is consuming capital at a historic pace and drawing attention from deep-pocketed investors around the world. The numbers are gigantic, with some starting to wonder about the risks of overbuilding given the uncertainty and exactly how AI will work and consume resources in the future. Dallas-based Aligned, one of the fastest-growing hyperscale data center operators in the Americas, provides infrastructure for cloud and AI companies. It operates or is developing about 50 campuses with a total of 5 gigawatts of operational and planned capacity across the region. With this investment in Aligned data centers, we further our goal of delivering infrastructure necessary to power the future of AI while offering our clients attractive opportunities to participate in its growth, BlackRock Chief Executive Larry Fink said in a statement. The deal marks the first investment for artificial intelligence infrastructure partnership founded by BlackRock Global Infrastructure Partners, MGX, Microsoft, NVIDIA, to expand the capacity of AI infrastructure and help shape the future of AI-driven economic growth. The group aims to raise as much as $100 billion in equity and debt to expand data center and agency infrastructure supporting AI growth. Macquarie first invested in Aligned in 2018 and expanded its stake in 2020. Under its ownership, the company grew from 2 sites to a continental platform, Macquarie said. Walmart forges deal with OpenAI to allow shopping with ChatGPT. Walmart is forming a partnership with OpenAI to let shoppers buy its products directly within ChatGPT, the artificial intelligence chatbot. It is a signal by the biggest U.S. retailer that online shopping is going to become a different experience from a retail websites we are used to. For years, shoppers have used a search bar and browsed a long list of items, Walmart Chief Executive Doug McMillon said. That is about to change. Within the next few months, U.S.-based ChatGPT users will be able to buy Walmart products instantly and directly in ChatGPT. The products will include nearly everything available on Walmart's website except for fresh food. Walmart Plus members will still get their benefits, such as free shipping when making purchases through ChatGPT. ChatGPT already allows shoppers to buy some products from Etsy's domestic sellers and will soon add some merchants on Shopify's e-commerce platform. For now, ChatGPT's shopping service called Instant Checkout only supports single-item purchases. Walmart is moving aggressively to be the retail partner of choice in a future in which shoppers use AI to find products. To grab those sales, Walmart is making a big concession, allowing the transaction to happen within ChatGPT. The retailer is sharing access to purchase data. This is a powerful source of consumer and product insights when collected on Walmart's scale. Walmart and other large retailers have traditionally worked to keep purchase data for themselves, using it to expand sales or sell to advertisers. OpenAI will now have access to that data for Walmart sales on ChatGPT. OpenAI has unveiled a partnership with Walmart and other companies to design an AI training certificate program. At a recent conference at Walmart's headquarters, executives from Walmart and OpenAI said AI would significantly change the job market. It's very clear that AI is going to change literally every job, McMillan said. News Corp owner of the Wall Street Journal has content licensing partnership with OpenAI. Hims and Hers expands into treatments for menopause. Hims and Hers said it is providing menopause care, marketing the company's latest push into hormone replacement therapies. The telehealth company sees the new offering as a major opportunity to scale its platform, given about 1.3 million women in the U.S. experience menopause each year. With often limited support from existing providers, said Jessica Shepherd, chief medical officer of Hers, the company's women's health business. Every woman will go through this. Does that mean they get the best care in how they navigate their symptoms? No, Shepherd said, adding only about 30% of OBGYN residency programs provide formal menopause training. Hims and Hers said it expects the new specialty to help their Hers unit to surpass $1 billion in annual revenue next year. The company, which has a range of offerings across hair care, weight loss, mental health, and other categories, posted revenue of $1.48 billion last year. Patients can work with providers on the platform to access plans that include prescription pills, patches, or creams for menopause and perimenopause. Treatment plans may involve hormones such as estradiol, which can alleviate symptoms like hot flashes and night sweats, and progesterone, which helps to improve sleep quality and protect the lining of the uterus, the company said. More middle-aged women, including several celebrities, have spoken out in recent years about their fueling greater interest in menopause care, Shepherd said. I think that has sparked the ability for people to be like, well, I'm not alone, and I'm not experiencing this on my own, she said. Hims and Hers also recently ventured further into hormonal treatments in its men's business, rolling out treatments for low testosterone on its platform last month. The company is trying to help people understand how important hormonal health is in preventing risks to overall health, Shepherd said. If we can enter into experience with patients early on, we really can offset a lot of chronic disease that may come later. Business Watch. Hyundai Motor, India unit to invest $5 billion in nation. Hyundai's Motors India, Indian subsidiary, plans to invest about $5 billion in India over the next 5 years to transform the country into a global export hub for the South Korean automaker. Hyundai Motor India aims to account for an almost one-third of its parent company's total exports by 2030. Hyundai Motor Chief Executive Jose Munoz said Wednesday. Hyundai's Indian subsidiary, which listed in India last year, plans to invest 450 billion rupees, equivalent to 5.07 billion by US dollars by 2030, and aims to report annual revenue of about 1 trillion rupees within the same time frame. We're making India a global export hub, targeting up to 30% export contribution, he said. Munoz said. The Indian arm plans to launch 26 products, including 7 new models. It will roll out a locally designed and developed electric sport utility vehicle by 2027. Hyundai Motor India guided for a dividend payout of 20 to 40%. Last year, Hyundai Motor became the first major South Korean company to list its local entity in India. Hyundai Motor India raised more than $3 billion in the biggest ever initial public offering in India. Novo Nordisk, a drug acquired for up to $2.1 billion. Novo Nordisk said it would take over a drug under development. Excuse me. To treat rare blood and kidney disorders from NASDAQ-listed biopharmaceutical firm Omeros for up to $2.1 billion. Under the asset purchase and license agreement, Novo Nordisk will be granted exclusive global rights to develop and commercialize Zaltenibart, Seattle-based. Omeros is eligible for near-term milestone payments of up to $2.1 billion, including potential development and commercial milestones on top of tiered royalties on net sales. The figure includes $340 million in upfront payments. Omeros' shares more than doubled Wednesday after the deal was announced. Novo Nordisk shares climbed 0.9% in Wednesday's trading in Denmark. The agreement marks a vote of confidence from the Danish pharmaceutical giant in Zaltenibart following positive trial data on paroxysmal nocturnal hemoglobinuria, a rare acquired blood disorder, the company said. The candidate drug has potential applications across therapeutic areas, including renal diseases. Novo Nordisk is in a strong position to build on the work done by Omeros to maximize the value of this asset and develop Zaltenibart into a differentiated and potentially best-in-class treatment approach for a number of rare blood and kidney disorders, said Martin Holtz-Lang, Chief Scientific Officer and Executive Vice President of Research and Development at Novo Nordisk. Novo Nordisk said it plans to launch a late-stage Phase 3 study of Zaltenibart in paroxysmal nocturnal hemoglobinuria and look to further development for other rare blood and kidney disorders once the deal is complete. The company had previously pledged to broaden its pipeline of rare disease drugs in late last year, announced plans to invest $1.2 billion in new production facilities in Denmark. The deal with Omeros is subject to certain conditions, such as regulatory approvals, and is expected to close in the fourth quarter. You have been listening to a reading of articles and features from October 16th issue of the Wall Street Journal. We read from the Wall Street Journal every Monday through Thursday at 11 p.m. Your reader has been P. Fitz. Thank you for listening.
You're listening to the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. We broadcast daily readings of printed matter to those who are blind or have a print disability throughout Buffalo, Western New York, and Southern Ontario's Niagara Peninsula. Almost 40 years and more than 300,000 hours of radio readings to those without sight. Our broadcast signal is provided at no charge by WNHH.